And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day it is. One of the leading Democrats in the country, a senior member of the House of Representatives, has followed up the yesterday total eclipse of the sun with a total revelation of new knowledge about the moon. And she shared that revelation with students on the high school level, and it's stunning. It changes everything and about our ability to live on the moon someday, in the interior of the moon. How would all this work? We will reveal this stunning discovery, which is being hailed by many people as illustrative of, well, some of the quirks among our leadership in this country. Speaking of quirks in leadership, the tragic case of the Oxford, Michigan school shooting, the parents of the shooter have just been sentenced, and they're going to be sentenced to 10 to 15 years each. They had separate trials for involuntary manslaughter. Their son, who's now 17, is going to be serving the rest of his life in prison. But his proud mother says she doesn't feel like she would have done anything differently. She doesn't feel like a failure as a mother, which is just one of the most unbelievable sentiments communicated in recent times. I mean, it's beyond belief. If you don't feel like you're going to be spent a failure as a mother when your son is going to be spending his entire life in prison. And speaking about spending time in prison, there's a new release, an updated version of a very controversial book, A Blowback, which is subtitled A Warning to Save Democracy from Trump's Revenge. It's written by Miles Taylor, who was at one time the chief of staff in Trump's Department of Homeland Security. And he had published an anonymous column from that position in the Trump administration. Now he is talking to other members of the Trump administration who are warning about the impact of Trump's vengeance if he is granted a second term. We are also going to be speaking about new charges by President Trump that have just been getting the attention they deserve. And they are new charges about Joe Biden being high on cocaine when he delivered his State of the Union address. What does this signify about where this campaign is going? By the way, President Trump has yet to offer any evidence. And again, it has to do, obviously, with the fact that at some point in the White House, they found some cocaine. The idea that the president himself was the user of that cocaine, is that worth investigating? We will talk about that. And most importantly of all, there is a new analysis, and it's a sweeping analysis in Politico about what the polls are showing. The polls are showing, at least according to Stephen Shepard, who's going to be joining us, that there is a huge shift in the electorate. It always used to be, at least for the last 20 to 25 years, that Republicans would do better with old people and Democrats would be doing much better with young people. Now, all of a sudden, Trump is winning young people and doing not so well among the older Americans. Why is that? Why is this switch going on, and is it really going on, or is it just a fault in the polling? We will get to that with Stephen Shepard on a busy day on the Michael Medved show. But first off, this question about the nature of the moon. Wilfred Riley, who has been a frequent guest on the show, college professor from Kentucky State University, he puts up on tweet today, again, after 60 years of both affirmative action and legacy admissions, many of our leaders are stupid, and stupid is in the style of President Trump, all in caps. Right now, the average IQ for a four-year graduate of a solid college is 105. And then he quotes Congressman Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas, from the Houston area, who used to be part of the Aeronautics and Space Committee. She was a ranking Democrat on that committee in Congress. And she basically now has told a number of young people that the moon is made up of gases. And this is what this sounded like. Somebody actually survived this attempt when she shocked attendees at a high school solar eclipse event yesterday by claiming that the rock-solid moon, NASA reports that the moon has a solid rocky surface cratered and pitted from impacts by asteroids, meteorites, and comets. The moon has a very thin and tenuous atmosphere called an exosphere. It is not breathable. But here is what Congresswoman Jackson Lee explained to the stunned high schoolers who are listening to her. Listen.
And sometimes you've heard the word full moon. And sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat that is almost impossible to go near the sun.
Not
the moon is more manageable.
Okay, Houston, we have a problem.
There's more. There's more. She spoke to attendees at this high school solar eclipse event yesterday by claiming the rock-solid moon is a planet that is made up mostly of gases before adding that she still wants to be the first in line to learn how to live there on the moon. The former top Democrat on the House Science Committee's Space Subcommittee badly botched elementary lunar facts while speaking during the gathering at Booker T. Washington High School in Houston. You've heard the word full moon. Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon. Is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases? Jackson Lee, who just lost her race for mayor of Houston, lost badly. She's 74. She told the teenage pupils who gathered on a sports field ahead of the rare celestial event. There, at some point, you wonder why people raise questions about Joe Biden's ability to handle a position of responsibility because he's 81 years old. She's 74. And this is a youngster in terms of other politicians, but with a great deal to learn about astronomy, which, of course, serving on the Space Committee of the House of Representatives is a great place to pick up on that information. Coming up, we'll be talking to Miles Taylor, one time honcho on the Trump administration, and also speaking about the sentencing of James and Jennifer Crumbly in Michigan. That and more coming up.
Michael Medved.
Yeah, this is cocaine is now an issue in the upcoming debates, which may or may not happen between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. I mean, somehow the whole idea of the two of them going up to debate, it makes you think of the last time they debated during the campaign of 2020 and that first debate, which was, by common consensus, the worst interchange, televised interchange between two presidential candidates, the worst debate ever since John Kennedy and Richard Nixon began that tradition in 1960. In any event, the fact that they are now debating about cocaine, what all of this is based on is that Donald Trump was doing an interview with Hugh Hewitt on the radio. And my friend Hugh Hewitt was asking him about whether he would debate Joe Biden. And because he didn't participate in any of the debates, none of them, for the Republican nomination, didn't compete with Nikki Haley or Chris Christie or Doug Burgum or Vivek Ramaswamy, none of them. In any event, Hugh Hewitt asked, now you have said you'd debate him anywhere, anytime. Do you think he'll agree to any debates? And Trump said, yeah, anywhere, anytime. And he says, do you think he'll agree? And he says, now contradicts him, I don't think so, but I hope he does. I think what happened, you know, with that white stuff that they happened to find, well, here, let's let President Trump explain his theory on his own. This is what he sounded like.
White stuff that they happened to find, which happened to be cocaine in the White House, I don't know. I think something's going on there, because I watched his State of the Union, and he was all jacked up at the beginning. By the end, he was fading fast. There's something going on there. I want a debate, and I think debates, with him at least, should be drug tested. I want to.
Mr. President, are you suggesting President Biden's using cocaine?
I don't know what he's using, but that was not. Hey, he was higher than a kite. And by the way, it was the worst address I've ever seen. State of the Nation. I'll tell you, State of the Union. That's not State of the Union, because he doesn't represent us properly. That I can tell you.
Okay, President Trump suggesting that the President of the United States was using cocaine and could not have delivered even what Trump considers to be the worst State of the Union address in history, could not have delivered that address without the help of cocaine. Now, again, there's a fascinating piece by Chris Saliza, who's been a frequent guest on this show, where he asks a question, which is, try to imagine if you go back a quarter century and you go back to the campaign of George Bush, George W. Bush, and Al Gore. The closest campaign in American history, you could say, what was decided by one electoral vote and based 527 votes, regular popular votes in the state of Florida. And that very close election, imagine if in the middle of that election, George Bush had accused Al Gore of using cocaine to prepare for a major speech. It's not even a question if anyone would have believed it. It would have been a sensation and a major topic of conversation for months.
Are you all ready to kick butt, kick butt, kick butt, kick butt?
Okay. It would have absolutely preempted. And what's so amazing about this is that people who are looking at this are looking at it only as a joke. Not as some kind of outrage. And there would at least have been some demand that whichever candidate making the charge would back it up with some evidence or some indication or apologize. But it's a good fodder for joking on SNL on Weekend Update with Michael Che and Colin Jost. Colin Jost had this to say about the great cocaine controversy. Listen.
Interview Donald Trump also claimed that President Biden was high on cocaine during the State of the Union, saying he was all jacked up at the beginning. By the end, he was fading fast. Huh, it almost sounds like Donald Trump knows exactly what it feels like to be on cocaine. You know, like at the beginning, you've got a lot of energy.
Yes, it shows him dancing.
By the end, you're fading fast.
Just recently heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will be doing.
Again, there's certain costs that you have when you have an 81-year-old candidate running against a 78-year-old candidate. And what's fascinating, of course, is that neither of them have been forthcoming with their medical information. But Biden, who is the president, much more than Trump, who basically has these certifications from his doctors, including a member of the House of Representatives, Donnie Jackson, talking about what a magnificent physical specimen President Trump is. The idea that we are treating our candidates this time by a separate standard, is that an allowance for them because of their advanced age? Who knows? Meanwhile, we're going to be speaking with Miles Taylor about what he says are extremely specific and scary agenda items for a Trump second term. What exactly is he talking about? Well, he's talking about new information in his book, A Blowback, A Warning to Save Democracy. And save democracy from what exactly? We will get into that coming up. We will also be talking about what the National Review calls Trump's abortion hedge. And then again, the two parents being sentenced in Michigan because their son, Ethan Crumbly, was a killer. Does that represent a failure of parenting? I think most people would assume it does. We will be right back with all of that coming up on The Medved Show.
I'm, of course, deeply honored to receive
The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, it is a pleasure to welcome to the show Miles Taylor, who is the author of an updated version of Blowback, A Warning to Save Democracy from Trump's Revenge. It's now in paperback and just released with all kinds of additional material. And Miles, before we begin, you've done something extraordinary here. You've made a fairly complete list of some of the critical response to your book, with all kinds of glowing recommendations, like from Stephen Chung, who's a spokesman for President Trump. Miles Taylor is a loser and a lying sack of beep. His book either belongs in the discount bin of the fiction section or should be repurposed as toilet paper. You quote an anonymous spokesman for Kellyanne Conway, despite trying to resuscitate the 15 minutes of fame, Miles Taylor should have stayed anonymous. And then President Trump said that there should be a major criminal liability for some scum like this, meaning you. Is this the kind of thing your mom puts on a refrigerator?
Well, and Michael, those were the good reviews. You know, you should see what the real reviews were. But, you know, I mean, first of all, good to be with you, my friend. Thank you for having me, as always. I mean, I will say, you know, I want to put those voices front and center because I think they speak for themselves. I mean, there's such a deep fear of having the light shined on the truth in that cohort of the Republican Party that you kind of don't need to make any comment about their reviews. I think it's all there in the open. So, you know, I put them front and center when folks ask me how blowback has been received.
Okay. And again, this was the book without this additional material. And the additional material is, if anything, even more scary, more alarming than anything that you had in the book previously. What, as an American citizen who cares about the country and the future of the country, what frightens you most about this Trump campaign and the prospect of a Trump second term?
You know, Michael, you and I have had great conversations about this before. There's a lot of things I could point to, but let me give you the personal and honest answer. And that is, when I was there in that administration in the first go around, the thing that most regularly disturbed me, and, you know, we all saw Trump's recklessness and his irresponsibility and his attraction to controversial policies, but the thing that stunned me was how often he wanted to use the powers of government and specifically the powers of the Department of Homeland Security, where I was the chief of staff, for his own personal self-interests, but also selectively. He had this view that if people didn't support him in certain parts of the country, think blue states like California or places like Puerto Rico, and they experienced any kind of suffering, that as president, he had the ability to make them pay for their lack of support by not giving them the federal government support. What do I mean by that? When there were wildfires in California, Donald Trump didn't want to send aid. Why? Because he said the governor at the time, Jerry Brown, said mean things about him. When there were the hurricanes in Puerto Rico, he didn't want to provide federal support and relief because the mayor was saying mean things about
wait,
him.
Wait. I remember seeing with my own eyes him throwing out the toilet paper. He threw out reels of rolls of toilet paper when he went to Puerto Rico?
Michael, I got to tell you, Donald Trump only provided relief to Puerto Rico kicking and screaming behind the scenes. In fact, I could tell you time and date that he sat down with us and he asked whether we could cut off the grant funding to Puerto Rico because he was mad that the island had turned against him politically. Now, when Trump would make these demands of our leadership at FEMA, of the leadership of the Department of Homeland Security, we of course said, Mr. President, this is not an option. The American people are suffering. We've got to provide support. It's a federal obligation. But I'll tell you, Michael, that's what worries me about a second term, is a lot of my colleagues at DHS and at the White House feel like in a second term, Donald Trump will want to engage in the selective enforcement of the laws and provision of aid. And what I compare this to is, you know, imagine calling 911 and them asking you for your voter registration instead of what your emergency is, you know, checking to see if you support them or not before they send a squad car to your house. That is the equivalent of what Trump wants to do with the powers of the federal government. And it's not what the American people would ever expect their federal government to do in times of crisis.
Okay, the beginning of your service in the Department of Homeland Security, you were serving under General John Kelly, who has been highly critical of President Trump. What did General Kelly tell you at the start of your service?
Well, you know, Michael, he was always very blunt. And there's no boss that I respect more that I've ever had in my career than John Kelly. And true to form in his bluntness, he said to me at the very beginning, look, it's not as bad as it looks inside the Trump administration. It is so much worse. And if you can believe it, that was his sales pitch to come into the administration. And it was his sales pitch because the point the general was trying to make is, I need all hands on deck. This guy is not equipped to run even a small business, and he's certainly not equipped to run the U.S. federal government. I'm worried about what I'm seeing. Will you come in and help me? And I did so begrudgingly, because I think a lot of us realized that going into that administration was at best going to be a career ender, and at worst, you know, potentially result in you in some very dangerous predicaments, which is where I ultimately found myself on the backside of that administration.
When you say at the backside of the administration, you found yourself in very painful predicaments, can you explain what some of those were?
Yeah, well, I'll put a fine point on it, which is by going out and telling the truth about what I saw inside that administration. At the time, it cost me my home, it cost me my job, it cost me my relationship, my life savings, and my personal security. And as I often tell folks, I found myself on Election Day 2020 in a safe house in Northern Virginia under armed guard and with a pistol under my pillow, because the death threats from the far right were so extreme that there were real concerns about my safety and my family's safety. That is what dissent looks like today in the United States. I could have never imagined that 10 years ago saying the words that I just said, but I say them often because I think it's really important for people to see how bad it's actually gotten. And, you know, the only way to combat that is more people have to come forward and tell the truth. That's the only thing that will lower the price of dissent. Otherwise, people who would use political intimidation and violence, they win, and they manage to silence people from telling the truth. And I think we're facing that again in this election cycle in 2024. Will people step up and say publicly what they say privately about this man, Donald Trump?
The President Trump is committed himself for the second term, if he is awarded one by the voters of this country, that he will be their voice, he will be their justice, and he will be their retribution. What does that retribution mean? And what would it look like? And in the new edition of Blowback, what are the agenda items specifically that the people of the United States need to reckon with when they're looking at another potential 4 years of Donald Trump's presidential leadership? We will get to that and more with Miles Taylor, a former high-ranking chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security under President Donald John Trump. We'll be right back.
The Michael Medved Show.
Speaking with Miles Taylor, the author of Blowback, and even though President Trump has not yet seen the revised edition with all kinds of additional information in the book and its paperback edition that is released this week, President Trump said he should be prosecuted. Are you listening to me back in Washington? He should be prosecuted. Miles, it is one of those things that there are some people out there who may not know some of the details of your story. In brief, can you explain what happened, how you joined the Trump team at a very senior level as a chief of staff in the Department of Homeland Security, and then you ultimately got off the team? How did that happen?
I did get off the team. And I will say, Michael, before jumping into that story, I actually think in some ways Donald Trump might like this book, because he's made it clear, as you noted at the top of the program, that his plan for a second term is retribution. It's revenge. And Blowback is the only book out there to lay out in detail how exactly he might go about that revenge. So I'd like to think in some ways this is the roadmap that he's been laying out. I think it's important for people to know. Now, I mean, going back in time, you know, look, I joined that administration reluctantly, and it was clear that you needed people who had experience in government. And I'd worked in the Bush administration. I was a lifelong conservative. And so I agreed to go into the Department of Homeland Security. But as you note, it became evident to me quite quickly that what we were seeing was not normal. And in fact, deeply, deeply alarming in terms of his instability, his recklessness, especially when it came to moments of decision and consequence when American lives were at stake in the White House Situation Room or on Air Force One. And I felt like the American people needed to know how bad Trump's lieutenants thought it was. His own cabinet members considered invoking the 25th Amendment potentially to remove him from office. And so I wrote an opinion piece in the New York Times. I wrote it anonymously because I knew that if I attached my name to it, it would become about me in a fight with Donald Trump instead of the message. So I put that out there to explain what Trump's cabinet was saying privately about his instability. But then ultimately, Michael, I felt like it was very important before the 2020 election to come forward in my own name. I never intended to stay in the shadows. And so I unmasked myself to say, look, I was the one who wrote it. And now let me give you more detail that I wasn't able to give you in that piece about who this man really was. And
what's fascinating about this whole process is I remember when the original anonymous column came out, there were theories and all of them somewhat credible of about 20 or 30 different high ranking people in the administration who could have written it. And have you been at all surprised at the number of former top officials? I think they say that of 44 people who served at one time or another in cabinet rank in the Trump administration, only four of them are supporting his bid for reelection.
Michael, I'm not surprised at all. And I'll tell you, any one of those officials could have been the one to write that op-ed. And that was my whole point behind it. And in fact, a lot of them, when I unmasked myself, called or messaged and said, I stand by every word that you said, my former bosses, my former colleagues, because they saw the same things that I saw with Donald Trump. So it might as well have been an opinion piece that was co-signed by dozens of those officials at the time period. There are a handful of holdouts that still want to be in Donald Trump's good graces and want to be in a second term. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of naked cynicism behind that. Some of those people who are supporting him a second go round are people that had dinners with me privately during the administration and said, Miles, this guy is a danger to the Republic. He's not fit for this office. And so I think history will judge them and their own consciences will judge them for talking out of two sides of their mouth. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, in terms of new warnings in the new edition of Blowback, what are the two top warnings that Americans should be aware of?
Well, look, I think one of the biggest concerns that I have is the misuse of the United States military. And, you know, leave aside for a second Donald Trump's opinions about America's veterans. I mean, I had folks, I talked to a lot of different peers of mine from the Trump administration for this book, about 100 different officials who served in the administration. And when it came to America's veterans, you know, people quoted things like Trump saying they're lazy malingerers. That's bad enough. But the things that I heard from my colleagues and the things that I saw when I was there about his intent to misuse the military, that's what really has me alarmed. And people don't really know this, but during the first term, Donald Trump explored creating his own mercenary force, a private military, not too different from what Vladimir Putin had with the Wagner Group, that would be accountable to him. Why? Because he was very frustrated that the generals would regularly tell him no, that certain things he wanted to do were illegal or immoral. So he looked into ways to be able to build his own mercenary group or to activate militia forces. Believe it or not, That's something that the president of the United States, under the right circumstances, has the power to do. Make no mistake, in a second term, Donald Trump will pursue those avenues to be able to have forces that he knows are, in his words, loyal to him. That's really bone-chilling to me. We've never seen anything like that of an American president trying to create an unaccountable military force. So that's one. But then the other piece, Michael, that I think we see Trump owning since I first published the hardcover of this book is how much he wants to wield the Justice Department to go after his enemies. In recent weeks, he's talked about going after Joe Biden, but he wants to go after people who served in his administration and turned against him. As you noted in this piece, he said that I should be prosecuted for speaking out against him. I mean, look, you can disagree with what I have to say about Donald Trump, but it's pretty clear that I'm engaging in First Amendment protected speech. That's remarkable to me that an American president, a former American president, would take those positions. And I think you can be sure that in the second term, he will turn democracy's guardrails into democracy's destruction. He will try to weaponize those guardrails against the country.
If he loses on in November, what do you think the chances are of another event like January 6th?
Well, I've got to say, as a national security person, Michael, I think the odds are quite high, and it doesn't take any sort of expert. If past is prologue, we saw what he was willing to do last time when he lost fair and square. I shudder to think what would happen this go around, especially because the stakes are so much higher for Donald Trump this time. I want people to think about this clearly. Even if he loses, Donald Trump worries that if he doesn't retake the White House, his reputation is at stake, his legacy and wealth are at stake, and his freedom is at stake because he's worried he'll be convicted in these cases and he'll go to prison. Imagine what a man like that, who already tried to prevent the transfer of power, will do a second time when his entire future is on the line. That has me very, very concerned, and he certainly has not been trying to tamp down the violent rhetoric of his supporters. So I think law enforcement nationwide is going to be on high alert no matter what happens in this election.
Knowing President Trump and the people who are closest to him, who's your prediction for his vice presidential choice?
Oh, gosh. You know, at this point, I think he's going to try to pick whoever is most forward leaning in showing their loyalty to Donald Trump. And right now, you know, my guess would be probably at least Stefanik or Kristi Noem or unfortunately someone I used to be a fan of, Marco Rubio.
Right. All of this is phenomenal. And the passionate response, positive and extremely negative to the book Blowback, shows the power that is still there in the publishing industry. Blowback is back. The information about the book you can find at michaelmedved.com. And Miles Taylor, I wish you Godspeed. And are you working on another book?
You know, I don't want to break news. I am working on something, but it's going to be very, very different than this. So I look forward to coming back and discussing. I think it'll throw you for a loop in a good way.
Well, I can't wait. Civil War novel. I don't know about either a fictitious Civil War to come or the one that occurred between 1861 and 1865. That's just a guess. Miles Taylor, appreciate your contribution. Coming up, we'll be speaking to a senior campaign and elections editor from Politico who says we are in the midst of a hugely significant shifting tectonic plates in terms of the upcoming election. What does that mean? We'll talk about it.